Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 26 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this episode and this evening of Christmas Creeps. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Johnny Five, the human robot. Mr. Five,
hello, hello.
What is shaking with you on this fine Black Friday episode?
I watched a movie, and now I'm going to talk about that movie.
Yep, you sure are. Also, this week, joining us is, once again, another special guest in lieu of Mr. Bradford. My friend, or rather, our friend, she's been on the show before. Libby Cudmore is back. Libby, how you doing? What's going on?
I will also be talking about a movie that was on my television.
Okay, so we're off to a great start. I can tell y'all are both extremely excited for the evening we have planned ahead of us, because this is our annual Shane Black Friday extravaganza, where we discuss one of the films of Mr. Shane Black. Now, Libby, you are, if among other things, an aficionado of this type of film, so why don't you tell us just a little bit about it?
So, this movie... which was directed by Rennie Harlan and starring Gina Davis and Patrick Malahide, I really enjoy, honestly. I think it's really cool how she goes around, you know, trying to find all of this treasure, and she sails on a pirate ship, and she makes out with Matthew Modine. I think it's a great film.
Wait, what?
You know, Cutthroat Island. That's what we're talking about tonight, right? Gina Davis? Rennie Harlan?
I mean, like... 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Like you're almost there, but no, we're not talking about Cutthroat Island. John and I watched The Long Kiss Goodnight. Did you not watch The Long Kiss Goodnight?
Well, you said Rennie Harlan and Gina Davis, so I just watched Die Hard 2 and Beetlejuice.
See?
Oh shit. See. Okay, so we're going to be having three separate conversations about four different films apparently tonight.
Oh boy. Oh,
so,
boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, buckle up, because it's going to be a wild fucking ride. But yes, so as you're out braving the holiday shopping hordes, we hope you will be enjoying this madcap episode into 90s action cinema ephemera, because good lord, this episode, this thing we've just done to ourselves tonight it's a lot.
Is this our last Shane Black Friday, by the way?
I'm sure he'll make something soon just to torture us.
I hope he does, because what are we going to do next year? We have to watch, like, Hanksgiving and do Polar Express? Oh, dear.
Ooh.
Oof. We definitely could. But yes, so this may or may not be our last Shane Black Friday, so let's fucking enjoy it.
The only thing enjoyable about this film.
The only thing enjoyable about this film...
that we're all here together.
Is that we're all here together, but also that in the film itself, the only thing enjoyable is one Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because you can tell he is having a blast.
He has said this is one of his favorites to rewatch.
That surprises me. It really does. Like,
that would require you to rewatch it.
Yeah, he's probably seen it more than any other living person. For those of you just joining us, we are in fact talking about 1996's The Long Kiss Goodnight, written and produced by Shane Black and directed by Rennie Harlan. And one of the things that I knew going into this, because I did, you know, my cursory research, was that Sam Jackson was supposed to have died over the course of this film. Test audiences hated that ending.
Yeah, because it sucks.
Specifically, one person got up and said, "You don't kill Sam Jackson in your movie."
That's fair.
So... they said, all right, I guess we have to put him back.
Who the hell do you think you are, Steven Spielberg?
Exactly. So what they did was they brought him back, put him back in the film. Knowing that, watching the movie, his character dies like 3 or 4 times,
yeah.
And he keeps coming back. And it gets funnier every time he does it.
Now, where were they originally going to kill him?
I have to assume they were going to kill him like near the end of the film.
Okay. I assume that the part with the him in the car was going to be some other completely contrived bullshit instead.
Okay. Like her right. husband or something, or the little kid drives the car, or...
Yeah, something
it's just that. It's just Rudy from Reindeer Games.
Basically, yeah, basically. But, like, knowing that his character was supposed to have died, I started, like, waiting for and watching, and he gets shot, he gets blown up, he gets knocked out of cars, he goes flying through the roof of a building... All kinds of terrible stuff happens to Sam Jackson in this ostensibly a Christmas movie. This is a Christmas movie. Like, we're not watching it for no reason.
Oh, yeah, this movie is Christmas as hell.
It is.
Is it?
I mean, isn't it, though?
We could talk about that at the end. I've got some theories.
It starts with a Christmas parade.
So what?
I mean, you have a flaming corpse strung up by Christmas lights. That would be weird in July. So it has to be a Christmas movie.
I just feel like if this was made nowadays with so much of the subject matter, which we'll get into, I feel like it would be Independence Day.
That's kind of fair.
Because I think it could take place any time.
Basically,
but it was an excuse.
Die Hard.
What?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it is an excuse to get Geena Davis, who in 1996 was the most beautiful woman to have ever existed across all time and space, to get her and her outrageous facial bone structure into a Mrs. Claus costume. And then people leer at her, which is not fair, because she is a treasure and a saint, and everyone should be nice to her and not be gross.
And that's just the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it spirals out of control from there. Okay, so we've done this a few times, and I want to do this again to Libby because I think it's funny.
Oh, boy.
Libby, I'm going to give you... How long did we say? 60 seconds?
60 seconds, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to give you 60 seconds to explain the plot of this movie. Every second you don't spend, I will donate $1 to a local charity.
Okay, this is great.
Last time, Dr. Nick explained the plot of Black Christmas in a minute and a half, and I have yet to steal $30 from a Salvation Army kettle.
Okay,
it's coming.
Well, get on that.
Announcing my intent to steal money is not the way to start this podcast.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
That's right. Okay, so Libby, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, three, two, one, go.
Geena Davis turns out that she used to be a CIA assassin, so she teams up with a low-rent detective, dyes her hair blonde, and saves Canada, as far as I can tell. The end.
That's pretty accurate.
John, are you going to second this one?
I'm gonna go with her, yeah. There's something about like 9/11 in there, too, but this is like 5 years before that, so who cares?
Yeah, it's the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, which they're still... they're going to... You know, I'm not. This doesn't count towards my 60 seconds. That was over because I said the end.
For the record, you took 13 seconds.
Yes.
So, $47 is going to some local charity. Congratulations.
Can I make a request for an animal shelter?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Can I make a request for my animal shelter?
Absolutely, you can.
Yes, let me take a quick moment to talk about the Susquehanna SPCA. They just rescued a dog that had chewed her own leg off because of abuse and neglect. Her name is Zoe, and they are raising funds for her emergency care. So I will send Joe a link if you want to help out with Zoe's care.
Yeah, so shoot me that link, and I will donate, and hopefully anybody out there listening will also be able to donate as well.
Yes. That's awesome. I really like that.
So back to 9/11.
Yeah, because it's they're going to blame... They lost funding after the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. So they're going to blow up a bridge. And the CIA is going to blow up a bridge into Canada, the Rainbow Bridge, and blame Muslims, proving that some things never change.
I think that's what ended up actually happening. I'm trying to remember where they were going to blow it up, but the entire plan was we're going to blow up this bomb over a tanker, and the tanker is full of like nuclear weapon residue, basically.
Okay, so they don't explicitly say this out loud because I think they even they knew in 1996 it was a little too much. They were going to blow the bomb up in the middle of a town square during a Christmas parade.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the movie, when you see her, like, barreling through this town square with this truck, like, all the people are standing on the sides of the streets, and, like, they're waiting for a Christmas parade. That's what was going to happen.
Okay, I got the idea that there was, like, a boat involved, and I figured, yeah, it's the CIA. Of course, it's stupid and convoluted bullshit.
Well, the guy was playing Gudetama Tap.
I was already checked out.
Well, the guy specifically mentions that, like, you know, some 4,000 people need to die for this thing to, you know, really goose the numbers and get the CIA the money. So they're going to basically blow up an entire town.
Oh, it's just Ozymandias. Okay.
Yep. But so
we're already at the end of the film. This has been a great podcast. Good night, everyone.
We skipped over all of the fun shit. Okay. So that actually brings up a question that I had that I posed to Twitter last night and didn't get much of an answer. How many movies can you name actually used the 93 World Trade Center bombing as a plot point?
None, except for this one.
I got two responses. Path to Paradise from 1997, and then our friend Donald said, I vividly remember a TV movie with Fran Drescher, which may or may not be the same thing. So if anybody else out there listening knows anything about this, please tell me, because I'm kind of fascinated by this. It's not at all what we should be talking about, but I want to know.
Write in, won't you?
Please, at Christmas Creeps on Twitter. So, okay. Gina Davis is an amnesiac, and her name is, her amnesiac name is Samantha Kane. And she's living as kind of, as a school teacher, a homemaker, in this kind of quiet New York suburban town.
I would like to object there of like, of all the jobs, like, oh, she doesn't remember who she is or anything about her past. What kind of bullshit job can we give her? Oh, she's a school teacher. That thing you run background checks to find.
Well, also she's an amnesiac. Yes. She's definitely going to be a great teacher. She remembers all of the things. No.
Yeah.
But the first like 10 or 15 minutes of this film is a really lovely, like kind of picture of a suburban small town, and she and her husband and her daughter have this lovely Christmas party that they put on for all their friends and neighbors.
And her boyfriend is real weird during all of it.
Oh, it's her boyfriend? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got some, like, he gives a really weird speech, and it's, like, kind of drunk, and then, like, sticks his tongue down her throat, like, in front of everyone, which I guess if I was dating Gina Davis, I'd probably do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I have an announcement to make. I love my dumb amnesiac wife.
Hashtag wife guy.
Hashtag wife guy. But then, so she...
I'm trying to think of, does I love my dumb amnesiac wife top I love my dead gay son from Heathers?
No, nothing does. Nothing does, because that guy's amazing, and I can't think of his name right now, but rest his soul.
But... So the thing that actually kicks off the plot into this movie is that Gina Davis is featured on TV in the local Christmas parade, and some crazy person in prison sees it and loses his mind.
And his name is One-Eyed Jack.
Yes. And he immediately breaks out of prison and goes to her house to try and kill her.
I feel like if I had the potential, like the ability to break out of prison, I would have broken out years ago and just, you know, gone and hung out. Did stuff, changed my name, moved to a small town, became a teacher. Well, what really triggers at first is she's in a car accident, and because she's driving someone home from the Christmas party, and she like goes through the windshield, and then because they hit a deer. Do you guys have deer where you are?
I saw like 3 bucks on the side of the road on my way home tonight.
So. Oh yeah, okay. I see dead deer on Market Street all the time. You should never see like dead deer on a street called Market Street.
No, but have you ever hit a deer?
Yes.
No.
Jonathan, you know, it's the worst.
Yeah, it fucking sucks. And I just barely clipped the damn thing, but still it's like it managed to like destroy the headlight and just roll all along the side of the car, so that door had to be replaced as well.
Yeah, we hit one in our Volkswagen Beetle a couple years ago, and it bounced off the driver's side and then went under an 18-wheeler, and it was among the most traumatic things I've ever witnessed. I mean, the good thing was that it was pretty much obliterated, so it wasn't one of those things where it like runs off into the woods and then dies of internal bleeding, but it was awful, and it destroyed our car.
So you didn't have to snap its neck after the fact?
No, I did not, and for that I am grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't have secret CIA training, so we just, you know, drove our battered car home, and then it was crushed by the auto crusher.
But then, okay, so because Rennie Harlan is the kind of director who likes to show us things we definitely should never see, when they hit the deer with the car, the deer's hooves go through the windshield and hit her passenger in the face, probably killing him immediately.
He either dies then or when he burns to death, which no one mentions later. Wait, like,
yeah, like the car hits a tree and explodes. Party.
Yeah, and their friend who was at their Christmas party. It's not like they're mourning. It's like the next shot is like she's in the hospital and then she's like chopping up vegetables because somehow she, I guess, was a secret CIA chef and knows how to chop up
vegetables. I want to say the movie is trying for some like stance here where the kind of the impetus of that crash is he basically cops a feel and she like gets distracted by that and then doesn't see the deer. So I think the movie is trying to make some stance like, oh yeah, well, that's a dirty old guy. Who cares if he's dead?
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that's...
So, like, I think there's, like, some level of that going on in the movie, too, of just like, oh, this character did an asshole thing, therefore no one really worried about if he's dead or not.
So the entire subtext of this two-hour movie is Rennie Harlan saying, hands off my wife.
Yeah, well, Rennie Harlan should have maybe kept his hands off the woman he cheated on Gina Davis with and got pregnant, so.
Womp womp. Okay.
Rennie Harlan, not a wife guy.
Not a wife guy. So then to move the plot along, Samantha realizes that she's like recovering these weird, like suppressed memories, I guess. And she has been hiring first the most expensive detectives she could find. And then she's like down to the bottom of the barrel of the detective list on the Yellow Pages. And she lands on Mitch Hennessy, played by Sam Jackson, who we meet in a sting operation of a prostitute and her John, where it turns out the prostitute is 100% in on the sting.
And she is one of only three women in this film. So we now we have now seen all three women in this film. The child, Gina Davis, and this secretary / prostitute.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah. But like the thing that I love about this scene is that because his partner is playing the role of the hooker, they had to go hire bums to play the other cops, and the bums do not know the Miranda rights.
And then one of them, like, throws up.
Yeah, which, like, that's a total Shane Black thing. Like, you know you're watching a Shane Black movie when that's the kind of plot point that comes up.
Yeah, and also there are no women in it.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. So, Gina Davis and Mitch...
We're just going to keep calling her Gina Davis.
Why not? Samantha Cain and Mitch Hennessy go on a road trip. Hey, so Libby and I do this podcast called OST Party where we talk about movie soundtracks. And kind of by accident, we almost only ever talk about road trip movies. This is another fucking road trip movie.
Yeah, and he's singing. He's singing I'd Really Love to See You Tonight by England Dan and John Ford Cooley.
We did kind of skip over the One-Eyed Jack thing. Yeah, One-Eyed Jack shows up at her house and she like does... She basically Jason Bournes him of like, okay, I'm just going to do this nonchalant CIA shit. Oh, how did I know how to do this?
Yeah. And there's a lot. So much of the action in this movie is the kind of stuff that I love to laugh at. I don't actually enjoy it. I just think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. The action sequences in this, and we'll get into these as they get progressively weirder and worse. They're extremely stagey.
Yeah.
And clunky.
With the same shotgun, at one point he shoots at her and she blocks it with the refrigerator door, but then he also blows a hole in the side of the house big enough for her to throw her daughter through.
The hole also catches fire. It explodes.
Of course it does.
So
the action scenes in this movie are like perfectly gif-able action scenes, basically. Like, I want to just take one out and just show it to you, put it on Twitter, because this is just a bunch of dumb bullshit and I love it.
Yeah,
I love it and I hate it.
You'd see it alongside a scene from Total Recall. You're like, oh, that makes sense because Total Recall was intentionally insane bullshit.
Right.
Yeah, and this is just, like, goofy and dumb.
Goofy and dumb, which is, like, to be fair, is Shane Black's stock and trade, but the goofier and dumber it gets, it's just too much, man.
Yeah, because this is, like, the worst of Shane Black meets the best of Rennie Harlan.
And that's saying something.
It's really... This is like, all he has.
This is the guy who wrote Lethal Weapon and also the guy who directed the Die Hard 2. Yeah. This also, as far as Shane Black goes, he was the first screenwriter to sell a script for $1 million. And he was also the first screenwriter to sell a script for $4 million with this one. And according to him, people were so jealous of him around town that he intentionally retired for 10 years out of screenwriting.
Yeah, the way I've heard it is he was so horrified by this that he intentionally retired for 10 years.
Either way, either one works for me.
So, but yeah, while they're driving, a woman jogs by. And Mitch Hennessy sort of, you know, snaps his neck to look at her. And Gina Davis, Samantha Kane. I know, I can't stop. Samantha Kane stands up for catcalled women everywhere because she is a feminist icon. And also she has to because she's one of the only women in the film.
Did Sam Jackson pick his character name himself?
Probably
did.
That is like, no, a very, very blaxploitation name.
Yeah, it reminds me of I'm going to talk about The Critic now because that's what I do.
Yes.
The thing Jeremy filmed where it was they were cops named Smith and Wesson.
Yeah,
like it's that on the nose.
Well, and I love The Critic, so we could talk about it all day.
See, as soon as I heard his name, I was like, okay, are more characters in this film going to show up named after different kinds of alcohol? And it didn't happen.
No.
And that disappointed me because that would be such a stained black thing.
Yeah. So.
But no, also. Why was this woman jogging down the highway anyway?
Because suburban layouts are not conducive to, I guess, you know, things that aren't cars. So cyclists, joggers, people with baby carriages as a means of keeping poor people out and forcing people to drive more. So.
That is the realest answer, and I wasn't expecting it. Good show. So...
Urban renewal. It's a monster.
Urban renewal.
Urban White renewal is why Samuel Jackson was able to catcall this lady.
So around this point in the film, we smash cut to the White House. And the CIA is briefing the president in his own kitchen about these lost assets and or trained assassins. Specifically, Samantha Kane slash what's her assassin name? Charlie
Baltimore.
Charlie Baltimore. You know, I kind of thought those two names should have been switched. Like Samantha Kane
Baltimore
sounds like
Charlie.
Samantha Kane sounds like a good assassin name. Charlie Baltimore sounds like the name an amnesiac comes up with when they have to tell someone their name.
Yeah, when they're like Charlie, they remember was their first dog, and Baltimore is the city they're found in.
Exactly.
Sort of like Arrested Development, Jareth Cute Story. So,
mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
Down with Love, Zip Martin.
So anyway, the president is pissed off at the CIA, which is also the news right now.
Yes. This movie is relevant as hell. And what's the CIA guy's name?
Who cares?
Perkins. It's Perkins because that's the name of the bear as well.
That's right. Oh, man.
What?
The daughter's teddy bear is named Mr. Perkins, and then the smash cuts to the White House, where the president is being briefed by a CIA agent named Mr. Perkins.
She named her daughter's teddy bear after her CIA handler.
Shane Black, you dumb motherfucker.
I hate this movie so much.
I love it.
And so,
because of a plot point, one of the only things she has left of her... like previous life is she was found with a suitcase and a key ostensibly to a safe deposit box, but all the information has been filed off of it. So who the hell knows what it goes to. And before they leave, she gives the key on a charm bracelet to her daughter around the bear's neck.
Yes.
Yes. I want to point out that Perkins is played by Patrick Malahide, who played Governor Ainslie in Cutthroat Island, where he wore a stupid wig and a frilly shirt and was awesome. And he wants to capture Gina Davis. So it's, like, thematic.
It really is. John nailed it. It's like a proto-Bourne identity.
Right. This or Cutthroat Island being a proto The Long Kiss Goodnight. Think about it, won't you? Thank you.
The answer is yes. So we basically have our players at this point. Because One-Eyed Jack doesn't really figure into the rest of this at all.
No.
He's killed almost immediately.
Yeah,
the only other person is Timothy, where there's another smash cut to this guy gets a call about, oh, you know, Charlie Baltimore turned back up. He's like, okay, well, let me kill this guy I was torturing, and then I'll go take care of that.
Right. And so, and this guy is played by Brian Cox, right?
No, this is Craig Bierko.
Okay, okay. But so they're the next stop on their road trip from hell is they have to go and meet with Brian Cox's character, who I guess was her mentor or trainer in the CIA before all this stuff went down.
I'm honestly not sure what the hell role he had in a story other than like one of the few things they turn up on Charlie Baltimore is a postcard written to this doctor. What's his name again?
No, it's a signed book.
A signed book. Yes. A signed book. And they find a postcard addressed to Uncle Max.
Yeah. Okay. Uncle Max is Perkins.
Yes.
Now, see, a lot of this gets kind of hand waved as far as I'm concerned, because it's basically she goes to this guy who leads her to this guy who leads her to that guy.
Mm-hmm. And
it's a lot of that. So I don't really want to detail.
No, not at all. They wind up at the doctor, Brian Cox's house. He's like, oh, yeah, you're a CIA trained assassin. Your name's Charlie Baltimore. And she's like, oh, well, I have this fiance, apparently. Look at this postcard. And he's like, holy shit, that postcard is actually secret code to the CIA saying that you're getting close to your target. But by the time he says this, she's already like, oh, hi, fiance. Remember me? We were engaged. And
right. And fiance is played by David Morse, and his codename is Daedalus.
So, but he's going by Luke.
Oh, Luke.
Just Luke.
Such an L.L. Bean-ass name.
Yeah. So, and then he, recognizing her as Charlie Baltimore, decides to torture her, which there's a lot of scenes in Cutthroat Island of like Gina Davis being like tortured and dripping wet, and he straps her to a water wheel. He kills Dr. Waldman and mm-hmm. straps her to a water wheel and like dunks her in freezing cold water, and she's in her underwear and she's like looking at Waldman's dead body, and it's pretty horrific. Mm-hmm. And then she murders Luke. Because she, like, becomes Charlie Baltimore and, like, fights him and kills him.
Right. Meanwhile, Mitch goes missing, I assumed to be murdered off screen. And then
If it wasn't, like, still only 45 minutes into the movie, I would have agreed. But I was like, there's still an hour and 15 minutes of the movie left. This movie's exactly 2 hours. I was like, oh, he can't be dead yet. There's still way too much movie left.
Well, you just never know with these kinds of movies.
Yeah, it was Shane Black. You never can tell.
You never that tricky Shane Black. Oh, you never know what he's gonna do next. But no, she rescues Mitch, and they make off to Atlantic City. And because we can't escape this current hellish existence for even a moment, of course there's a shot of the fucking Trump Tower right there.
Oh, yeah, they're staying in the goddamn Taj Mahal.
Yes.
Yep.
Where she proceeds to dye her hair blonde, put on really, really, really bad eye makeup, just like horrifically, like, all right, Hot Topic, Gina, let's dial it back a little bit. And then tries to be all like sexy and like, oh, I didn't want the kid. And there's a lot to think about in this. It's about how, how women never feel fully in charge of their identity, because too often it is shaped by cultural, familial, and societal forces that mm-hmm. sort of box them into these different roles that they feel like they have to play. See, this is actually a good movie.
She goes in the bathroom, comes out, what if I look like Charlize Theron? Would that be better?
Yeah, will that work?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and also, like, while she's like doing herself over and getting her hair bleached, they're playing a cover of She's Not There by The Zombies. The original mm-hmm. by The Zombies, not the cover. And it occurred to me at this exact moment in the film, oh my god, this is Kill Bill. What we're seeing here is Kill Bill.
Yeah.
And Kill Bill stole all of this because, Tarantino doesn't have an original bone in his body. We all knew that. Mm-hmm. But little did we know that this was the thing he was stealing from.
That's embarrassing. I would never admit that.
What, that I recognize that? Or if I were Tarantino, I would...
If I were Tarantino, I would... No.
I were Quentin Tarantino, I would never in a million years say, yeah, I got this from Shane Black, you guys.
Yeah, I got this from like, Rennie Harlan.
It's like, oh no, not a Rennie Harlan movie. It was some like, it was a foreign thing that you've never heard of. It wasn't this really crappy movie from 3 years ago.
Oh, it was a Swedish film directed by René Harlan. Damn it. So at this point, now Charlie decides that she has to go it alone because Mitch is just a small-time cop. He can't help her. and she needs to go do this thing on her own.
She's too sexy, too badass, because this is what we thought feminism was in 1996. It's like you have to kick things and be blonde and skinny and hate
swear
everything.
A lot more.
And
yeah.
Push Sam Jackson out of cars. Yeah. So,
this is what men think that like strong women look like. They hate
it. There's even that bit where like she's trying to come on to Mitch, and Mitch like straight up tells her to her face, like, "No, I liked Samantha better than Charlie. Charlie doesn't do anything for me."
Yeah. Also, blonde Gina Davis doesn't do anything for me either.
I was gonna ask you like which look is better, but there you go.
She really doesn't look like Gina Davis.
No. I will point out that there is a very Tarantino-esque close up on her stretchy black block heel knee-high stretch boots. Now, you guys probably don't know this, but in 1996, those were issued to all women over the age of 13. You were required to wear them.
Y'all had meetings about this?
No, they just showed up with like a note. You were required to wear these. Mine had dragons on them. They were the coolest shoes I've ever owned.
That sounds like a cool shoe. I would not wear that shoe, but I would appreciate that shoe.
And actually, I was at Macy's today, and the block heel stretchy black boot is back.
Ugh.
So, but now it's all over right. The knee, so it's like the Long Kiss Goodnight, but also Cutthroat Island.
Huh. See, everything comes. Everything's coming up, Harlan.
Mister, give me the Gina Davis special.
It's like poetry. It rhymes.
I was trying not to say that line earlier.
Okay, so the big finale of this film takes place in Union Springs, New York, right?
I guess not by me, but upstate New York, my home place.
Mm. Yeah, I had to look up Union Springs to see if this was anywhere near you, and not really.
No, it's about 5 hours.
But, okay, so let's just talk about the big gambit for the end of this film. Spoilers if you haven't seen it. If you want to see it, okay, sure. It's $3 online. Go watch it. So the CIA is setting up this bomb. We've talked about it a little bit already, but basically they want to create a false flag operation so that the president will fund their bullshit for another X number of years. And Charlie and Mitch are like the flies in the ointment that are stopping them from doing this. They have kidnapped her daughter, first and foremost, and are using her as bait to draw Charlie out and destroy her, and then their evil plot can go on as is.
I just want to point out, this movie doesn't know where Union Springs is. Union Springs is like 2 hours from the Canadian border.
Yeah, because it does. The actual ending is on the U.S.-Canadian border.
And they mention Niagara Falls a lot, but they never actually go there either. And if you're going to be in that part of New York, I'm looking at a map. Yeah, the border is either you're going to Buffalo, like to Niagara Falls, that little part of the border, or you're going up towards Vermont, basically. there's no way. Not that I should expect out of this movie, but they picked a real city, but picked a real city as far away from possible from what they were trying to make with the point of the script.
They might as well have said it in Oneonta. I mean, that's one of those things. A lot of New York borders Canada, so you had some room to set it someplace other than 2 hours from the border.
But also, like the CIA project, it's called Operation Niagara because Operation Honeymoon, thank you. Oh, God. Even better. Operation Honeymoon takes place, you know, in Niagara Falls. What's the name of the hotel? The hotel seemed important, and I didn't write it down. It was like the Honeymoon Inn or something like that.
I was playing Gudetama Tap by the end of this. I was done. I was out.
It's one of those places that people go on their honeymoons when they don't know where else to go. It's that kind of a place.
It's the place for me to Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Yeah, the end of this really reminded me of Die Hard with a Vengeance. It made me think that Rennie Harlan was jealous that someone made a better Die Hard.
Incidentally, my husband and I did go to Canada for our honeymoon. We went to Montreal, though.
So you guys had a better plan than
yes,
these people.
We did. Although we ended up seeing some independent theater, which was not a good plan. It involved puppetry, and the less said about this, the better.
French Canadian independent theater on a hunt. That's like a sad short story.
It's a long story. I'll get into it another time.
That's a lot. Yeah. So many of this film's most ridiculous shit happens here.
So much of it.
Up to and including Samantha and her daughter's escape from a meat locker, which might be my new favorite bullshit thing I've ever seen in my life.
So, wasn't it all established that she filled the Betsy Wetsy doll with
gasoline? I was wondering
gasoline?
That. I thought, like, maybe I just got up to get a cookie or something.
No, I don't think they actually explained it. Like, so the daughter is, like, knocked out on a bed, and one of the CIA guys, like, puts this doll next to her because it looks, you know, it looks better if they do that. At no point do they establish that it's full of gasoline.
Here's what happens. Here's what happens. I actually do kind of, they don't explain this, but I see what they were trying to do. So the entire part is that they're all rushing back towards whatever the hell town Samantha lives in. Cause she's like, oh, I got to get this key to the safe deposit box. I remember where it is. It's full of money and passports and guns and shit.
Right.
And then the CIA guys know she's going back there. And so they go back there, and Timothy, Craig Bierko, kidnaps her daughter. And so then they all do all this running around again. They end up at a farm in outside Union Springs, which they say is near Niagara Falls. They're like, oh, it's the Niagara Falls area, Union Springs.
I figured out, I see in my notes where it is. She lives in Union Springs. So wherever they're going is outside of town, way outside of town.
Okay, yeah, they're going towards Niagara Falls, all right,
yeah,
which is about 2 hours away. So then she goes to this farm and starts shooting it up and rescues her daughter, but it's totally a setup, and she ends up, like, basically falling into a basement, like a cellar with her daughter, and shoots around for no fucking reason other than to just make a kerosene tank start leaking. And I think what we're supposed to understand is that she somehow has the time to fill the Betsy Wetsy doll up with kerosene.
I must have blacked out because I don't remember that.
Yep, I don't remember a single thing about that.
Yeah, but that's how they get kidnapped, and they end up with Hennessy in the hotel, and they are in the meat locker.
Right, Hennessy is like tied up upstairs. They're in the meat locker downstairs. So Samantha hatches the scheme, and it's this scheme that just blows my mind. Like, she takes a crowbar, or no, a meat hook, and jams it underneath the door, so that she can squeeze the kerosene out of the Betsy Wetsy under the door, because on the other side of the door are lots of barrels of, I guess, also kerosene.
Did we explain what the CIA is even trying to do, by the way?
Like, 4 times, yes.
Okay.
But do we understand it? No. Nobody does.
No, not a bit. Yes, we're the CIA. We're going to murder a town for money from the president. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. There's something about there's a dead guy in the freezer. That's the patsy they're going to do on it. They're going to put
him in the car to, like, quote unquote, like, drive the tanker. And this is one of those things you look at this plan, and you think, you know what? The Trump administration looked at Perkins and thought, yeah, this guy's got some good ideas. He seems like a competent person.
We want you. Yes.
Yeah.
So they blow up this meat locker with the kerosene from the butt of this Betsy Wetsy doll.
You don't pee out of your butt, Joe.
Betsy Wetsy does, damn it.
I don't expect these dolls to be anatomically correct, okay? That's weird. Excuse me for living, okay?
The CIA guy gives her, like, an anatomical model.
Show me on the kerosene-filled doll where they touched you.
But part of the plan is, too, she can't get a spark to start. And after she's, like, tried for, like, 5 minutes to do this and break down crying, the daughter's like, oh, I have matches. Did you want those?
Right. Because before mom left on this mission, she gives her daughter a candle and says, light this for, you know, keep this lit for me. What do you call those when you put those in the window?
A beacon.
Well, I know, but it's like an actual, like, Christmas thing, because this is a Christmas movie. Shit, what are those candles called?
I don't know.
Candle, window, Christmas. Google. Save me. Save my life. They're just called Christmas window candles. God damn it. So the candle's in the window. Like, she wants her daughter to keep the candle lit so that she can find her way home. And so the daughter keeps the book of matches in her glove.
It's not her glove, it's her cast. Because earlier, she fell down on the ice. This is important, this is a plot point. Right after her mom's accident, she falls down on the ice while ice skating, fractures her wrist, and the Charlie Baltimore part of Samantha Kane comes out and is like, "Don't be such a baby!" And, like, life is pain and all this other, like, really abusive bullshit. And it turns out that her arm was fractured.
A flashback within a flashback. What is this, a Shane Black movie? But that's exactly what it is. Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. So, we are all over the place.
I know. Long story short, they blow this meat locker the fuck up. The door blows out.
It blows Samuel L. Jackson out the window.
Who is on the third floor, or second or third floor of this building, out the window, through the sign of the hotel, and into the snow outside. Again, I'm like, he's totally dead, right?
And he gets up and immediately, like, kills a guy by throwing a knife into his throat.
Yes! You can't kill this man!
But then... The daughter runs out with the daughter. She's like, "Oh, go hide somewhere." The daughter's like, "Okay, I'll hide in like the storage compartment where you put like the jack and everything on this tanker truck."
The tanker truck that has just been secured with a bomb that is going to explode in 30 minutes. So great, we now have a ticking clock and a bomb at the end of this Christmas movie. I love it.
Gina Davis. Things are fun when they're fun.
I love having fun with you guys. Gina Davis drives this truck like a bat out of hell through town because she knows like their plan is to blow it up in the middle of the town square. Drives it to the U.S.-Canadian border. It crashes. There are helicopters involved.
There was a gunfight that we missed that's important because Samuel L. Jackson apparently dies in the gunfight.
Yes. Yes. It's a really strange scene where like he is going through and attacking all these guys, and she is like acting as his point person with a sniper rifle, telling him, you know, shoot here, shoot there, shoot there.
She's also getting impatient that he doesn't recognize, like, what do you mean go to 30 degrees to the left? And she just starts shooting everybody anyway.
Right. Like, because she's better than him at all this stuff. Someone end this film for me. I'm tired.
So they end up crashing the truck at the, she gets into the tank, she like basically hijacks the tanker, drives it, the brakes are cut, she's having to crash it at the Canadian border on a bridge, and she gets her daughter and jumps out, and at this point, Timothy, the antagonist, shows back up, she kicks him off the bridge, he survives and gets picked back up by the helicopter, they start opening fire on them. Sam Jackson somehow is inside a different truck and is now, like, inside the car, inside the truck, like at the end of Reindeer Games, drives the car out and runs over some bunch of people, picks her up, and drives her over the Canadian border after she does a... It's basically it's a trick you would see in a movie, like, that takes place in a theater of, like, oh, I'm going to cut the sandbag and ride the rope up into the rigging, you know? So
they
she
do
does
that. In Cutthroat Island!
I was about to say, do I say pirate movie or stage movie? Because I'm picturing both, yeah. So she, like, jumps up and gets a machine gun that some guy fell out of the helicopter has and shoots the helicopter down, I guess, and he falls out and dies screaming.
Well, it's not only that he falls out, she hits a flare that's in his pocket, he lights on fire, and then falls out.
So he's dead.
Because you can't kill him once, you have to kill him twice.
So he's dead, and then so she, Sam Jackson, and the daughter are all in Canada. And then the epilogue is she gets a call from the president who's like, "Hey, you want to work for the CIA?" And she's like, "No, I have a briefcase full of money. I'm cool."
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing is, though, she's like really weak and she tells her daughter, like, run away. And then like collapses. And then her daughter comes back and says all the mean shit that she said to her daughter.
Yes.
About like, don't be a baby, get up. And so you're like, okay, see, it's good. It's good that she said all that. It saved her life. It's cool that she's abusive. My husband's takeaway from this, as he was watching it sort of half-heartedly along with me, was don't ever go to Canada.
Wow. Attention, Canadian Chamber of Commerce. Do not show anyone the long kiss goodnight. I keep almost wanting to call this the long Good Friday.
Well, when they're in the first scene, where she starts realizing she's Charlie Baltimore, where they're in the Dutch cabin motels.
Yeah.
And she discovers that her suitcase is full of guns. They're watching Robert Altman's The Long Goodbye.
Oh, I missed that.
We completely forgot about it. Yeah, her suitcase that she is the only other thing she has, like, from her pre-amnesiac life, has a false bottom with a sniper rifle in it.
Yes.
But she remembers how to put together.
Yeah, because chefs do that. That's a catchphrase they keep trying to make her say throughout the whole movie. Chefs do that.
She says it once, and then they were like, you know what? This is dumb. This is a dumb catchphrase.
I wish she had said it at everything she did. It would have been great.
Just keep hammering that home. Get that on t-shirts.
Like, even if your catchphrase is stupid, don't just do it twice and drop it. Hammer that shit into the ground. Yeah,
it's like with Futurama. They tried to make "But I Am Already in My Pajamas" a catchphrase for like the first 2.5 episodes and then stopped.
Also, this film ends with one of the biggest, dumbest explosions I've ever seen. Like, the tanker truck explodes in this giant fiery ball of death, and they're driving the car away from it, and I swear the flames engulf the car at least 2 or 3 times as Mitch is driving.
And there are all these other cars just raining down, like, where were these other cars? Were these cars on the bridge? If they're on the bridge, that means there were people in them driving them. There's a bunch of dead people in this scene now.
Well, I think they're supposed to be, like, the CIA, like, the bad guys.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, this movie does have a good point about fuck the CIA, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, okay, one of the last things we see that I'll mention before we close it out, there's like a Larry King Live interview, or a news segment, rather, where he's talking about, you know, these CIA guys are now excommunicado, and we're going to have to go and talk with other CIA guys. And the picture they put up on the screen, CIA Section Chief Walter Hodge. Did either of you recognize him?
No.
It's Uncle Frank from Home Alone.
Nice.
He's not in the movie, but his picture is.
That's funny.
And it's fucking Uncle Frank saying to his little CIA goons, look what you did, you little jerks.
See, it's a Christmas movie. No,
it is a Christmas. It doesn't. Yeah. Okay, we'll switch gears here in a moment. Actually, we'll do it. Now,
CIA man uncredited. Yeah, there he is on the cast list.
Yeah, so that's The Long Kiss Goodnight. It is long and circuitous, and lots of dumb bullshit happens, and I don't know how good any of it is. However, it is very fun to laugh at because it's so stupid.
Yeah, it really deserves a riff track.
It does, yeah. If there's not one, there should be. Let's jump over to the crankometer. Which is our patented X and Y axis scale for how to rate these Christmas movies. The X axis is Christmosity, how Christmassy a film is, and the Y axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is.
I want to just say real quick first, because we were talking about this the other day, me and you.
I was just about to. Yeah.
Do you know why we call this the crankometer? Like, by any chance?
I'm guessing it has something to do with the Shermometer and Christmas at the Cranks.
It's because when we originally did this, like, episode 3, because we were asked about this, we were like, does anybody who's not been on this show from the beginning know what the fuck the crankometer is about? Because I had to stop and think, like, why the fuck do we call it the crankometer? Oh, yeah, that's why. It's because originally it was on a scale from Christmas with the Cranks to Crank High Voltage. How good is this movie?
So I was partially right.
Yes.
Yes. And the first film we subjected this scale to was Reindeer Games.
I was wondering why you kept bringing that up.
Which is very similar to this film for a number of reasons, all of which are terrible.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're in the crankometer section now. Libby and Jonathan Five, how Christmassy is The Long Kiss Goodnight?
I don't think it's particularly Christmassy. It has the trappings of Christmas in that there are Christmas carols and Christmas trees, but as I said previously, you could set this at any time of the year, and it is merely Christmassy by virtue of being a Shane Black joint.
Yeah. Yeah, like, there's a lot of Christmas shit, and some of it does kind of play into the plot a little bit, but it's not anything you couldn't write around if you weren't... The way you set this movie at Christmas because you're determined to set it at Christmas. There's nothing that needs to be at Christmas. You couldn't just rewrite to be a 4th of July or something, or just whenever.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Sam drives the tanker at the end through a Christmas parade. It really doesn't have to be. It could be a farmer's market for all we care.
It could be that damn like German pride parade or whatever the hell it is from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, or mayor's inauguration, or just, you know, a school carnival. Yeah.
What would be a more fun parade to put at the end of this film?
The straight pride parade. And they just don't stop the tanker, just mow them all down.
Well, you're not going to kill 4,000 people doing that. Come on.
But it would still be fun.
You would have to drive it through at least 1,000 straight pride parades. Oh my god. We do not condone violence of any sort on this film, on this
except
podcast.
Except against Nazis. Punch Nazis.
Punch all the Nazis, yes. Oh, so yeah, I agree. There's no reason, no real genuine reason for this to be said at Christmas other than Shane Black just really likes it. And I think over the course of these Shane Black Friday episodes that we've done, we've kind of discovered that he really does just like doing it because he likes the pretty lights and the snow.
Yeah.
That's and pretty he's much edgy it. And it's like, whoa, it's action and it takes place at Christmas and people swear, look at me, I'm so edgy.
He wants to be Shane on the Black. Top of that alternative Christmas list so bad.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like he invented the Twitter, what's your favorite Christmas movie? Or retweet with your favorite controversial Christmas movie that comes out this time of year and is so exhausting.
And then everyone replies to him with Die Hard, knowing that Shane Black's going to hate the fuck out of you.
Oh, boy. Although, if it weren't for movies like this, we wouldn't have a podcast, so...
That's true.
Shane Black, thank you for all that you do so that we have Joe and Jonathan here with us.
Please,
amen.
Please consider making Predators 2 a Christmas movie. Thank you.
Also put Walton Goggins in it. He was the one good thing about Predator. Or, sorry, about Predators. Shane Black's is the Predator.
Co-signed, yes. I agree to all of this.
I would say go ahead and put Jesse Ventura in it, too, but he's like 130 years old now.
You know what would be great, though? If we gave the Predator franchise to Danny McBride.
Oh, hell yes.
Because we know he can do Halloween. Halloween was pretty good. We know he can do basically anything with Walton Goggins, because that always turns out good. What if we put the two together?
So, yeah, and he was pretty good in Prometheus. He was the... Covenant.
Covenant.
So, sorry, Danny McBride was pretty good in Covenant. He was the only good thing about Covenant. So, yeah, I fully support this. I think it'd be great. And it'd be super R-rated. And he's, you know what? Danny McBride's a better Shane Black. There, I said it.
That's controversial, and that's going to get us comments, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. I said what I said.
Listen, I think at this point, having seen The Predator, I am over my Shane Black fanboy phase. I appreciate some of the things that he does, but in movies like this, you can really tell he's just kind of being a try-hard piece of shit.
Yeah, he made one good movie, two if you count The Nice Guys, although The Nice Guys is trying pretty fucking hard. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is his only good movie.
Oh, I was going to say Lethal Weapon, but okay.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon just hasn't aged all that well. It's like, it's good for its time, but I don't think it holds up.
It's a great film because it's about family.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon works if you're like, I want to watch some fucking 80s-ass shit.
Yeah, it's extremely 80s, except in my head, Lethal Weapon always turns into Running Scared. So it's like, in my mind, Lethal Weapon ends with Michael McDonald singing Sweet Freedom.
How did I know you were going to bring that up? I don't know. They're all the same movie, is really what it is.
More or less.
We have to come up with a number for this, though. And I think we were going to dip into the negatives, because, which is odd, because there's so much Christmassy shit in this movie. But, yeah, it's not really for any good reason. So, -1?
Yeah, I'll say -1. I don't want to go too much negative, more negative than that, because, I mean, like...
Because our thing is always, like, does it misuse Christmas?
Yes.
Doesn't really misuse it, because it doesn't really use it.
Exactly.
It's just there.
Yeah. It's window dressing.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. So -1 for Chris. Oh, okay, good. That leads us into the y-axis, which is going to be way more fun. How good is The Long Kiss Goodnight? It's not great.
Nope. I'd say 14.
Whoa. Out of a possible five, that means
it's
really,
sorry,
really
I didn't
good.
Realize it was out of five. I was thinking out of 100.
It's a possible, yeah, out of a possible negative five to positive five.
I'm gonna say negative two.
Okay,
I'll agree with that. Yeah, like it's... I didn't want to give it points for Sam Jackson, and I didn't want to give it points for saying that the CIA is bad.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, I'm outvoted at this point. It's negative two here. So,
What were you gonna say?
I was going to say also a negative one because, like, you know, Sam Jackson kind of elevates this. Gina Davis kind of elevates this, except when she doesn't. And I really enjoy how janky all of the action scenes are.
Gina Davis was better in Cutthroat Island. Everything in this film was better in Cutthroat Island.
Was Sam Jackson better in Cutthroat Island?
Unfortunately, he was not. He would have made Cutthroat Island that much better.
You could have said yes and I would have believed you.
You're missing out by not watching Cutthroat Island. It's great.
Fair enough.
That movie made me the woman I am today.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to put a stamp on it. So the score for The Long Kiss Goodnight is a negative one, negative two on our crankometer. So, Booker, you know what to do. The last thing, I guess, is we really didn't get into why this is even called The Long Kiss Goodnight. And does anyone want to field that, or should we just not even touch
she
it?
She says early on in the film that she has kissed her past goodnight. But
it
was a long kiss, I guess. Hence the name, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
It has been 8 years, so that's true.
What is long? What is time, even? Time is a construct.
I don't know. 2013 happened last week, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know anymore. But yeah, so yeah, The Long Kiss Goodnight is a hell of a thing if you want to watch some dumb bullshit, but pretty much only then.
Yeah, it's only worthy. You know what? Here's what The Long Kiss Goodnight is for. When you see those stupid retweet with your favorite Christmas movie polls come up, retweet with The Long Kiss Goodnight. Throw off the algorithm and make everybody mad.
That is a beautiful excuse. I've been doing that with Prometheus, but I'm going to have to change it up this year and do Long Kiss Goodnight just to fuck with people.
I answered honestly and went with MST3K Santa Claus.
I saw that.
Yeah, that is genuinely my favorite Christmas movie.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's one we haven't gotten to yet. We've done Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, but Santa Claus hadn't made it there yet.
Yeah, well, bring me on next time.
We'll do it. All right. Well, I think that's going to have to close it out for Christmas Creeps. But before we go, Libby, is there anything you want to plug on the internet or tell our listeners about?
You should listen to the OST Party, which is a great podcast about movie soundtracks. We're talking about Roadhouse, which is amazing. Not a Christmas movie. It's an everyday movie that you should be watching. It's a religion. It's a way of life. You can also catch me over on the Shattered Shield podcast, where we're talking about season 4 of The Shield. If you want to hear more of my thoughts on Walton Goggins, that's where to go.
Cool. Sounds good. J-Man, do you want to put a link out into the world? What you want to promote?
I want to promote Direct Action, actually. If you or anyone you know has an elf on the shelf, please take said elf and throw it in the trash can at your local gas station.
Seconded.
Thirded.
But can you tell us why?
Fuck that thing. Just fuck everything about it. So I kind of forgot the origin of Elf on the Shelf, and I looked it up because I was like, this is such some made up stupid bullshit, isn't it? And Wikipedia itself seems to be very, very suspicious and non-believing of the story the creators give as the Elf on the Shelf's genesis. Because the story they gave is, We thought of this thing when we were kids. We had this elf doll named Frisbee, and it would sit on different places in the house every morning, and it would move around at night, and we would report back to Santa what we were doing. Except Wikipedia's take on it was like, oh no, they literally thought this up while having tea with their mom. They were like, what's a thing we can market as a tradition?
I do hate Elf on the Shelf. I feel like it is a child's first introduction to the police state.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because here's an important, if you don't know about Elf on the Shelf, here's the important thing. You're not allowed to touch the elf, or the elf loses its magic and dies.
Touch that elf.
Hashtag touch that elf. We're going to get so many angry letters about that.
Don't care.
Hashtag touch that elf.
I don't want anybody else.
When finish
I
the
think
thought.
About you, I touch my elf. Sorry, I couldn't get through that without laughing.
This is the podcast for Scrooges and brigands and perverts, and I love it. Tag yourself, I'm the Scrooge.
I'm the brigand.
I can't even talk.
And Libby makes three. Okay. So that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps. If you enjoyed the show and want to tell us more about it, you can get at us on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. You can go to your email box and email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. You can go to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play or YouTube. Subscribe, leave us comments. We will have our episodes up there. Let people know this is a show worth listening to as we get into the holiday season. It's going to be a wild ride from here on out. I promise you that. One last parting gift from us to you, though, or rather a piece of advice. Please be nice to the retail workers this holiday season, especially on Black Friday.
If you don't, that elf on the shelf will come to life and kill you.
He will strangle you in your sleep with piano wire.
True story.
And not the thin one.
Don't be a dick.
Anyway, good night, everybody. That's been Christmas Creeps.
Good night.
Good night.
Happy Christmas.